Welcome to the Metacast. I'm Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
Welcome back.
We're in beautiful downtown Raleigh, North Carolina.
Well, it's not so beautiful today.
It isn't. It's rainy. It's rainy in the south, but it's not snowing. It's not not freezing. So we're probably pretty lucky, Josh.
Yeah, you're right.
I'll take that.
You're right. I'm sorry for lamenting the rain.
Well, you're from the north. Where are you? You're from, what, Ohio?
Yeah, Akron, Cleveland area.
Yes, which gets a little bit of snow in the winter.
It never goes away.
It doesn't. It's got that gray overcast.
Yeah, it's awesome. It turns gray.
Yeah, exactly. But it is. It's beautiful downtown Raleigh. I always enjoy seeing Josh. That's like my ray of sunshine on a cloudy day. Oh my God! What a way to start.
So hey, while we're talking about beautiful Raleigh, just saw on Twitter that it was named the fifth best place for technology professionals to live, so that's another awesomeness of our area aside from the weather. So
we have a great Agile community here. There's this a meetup group called Agile RTP, and I help facilitate it, and we're like 980 members.
Wow.
So we're approaching 1,000 raging Agilists in this area. Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
That's pretty. There's not that many areas that have more raging Agilists. Like Atlanta's but they're bigger. They're bigger than we are. Atlanta is like 1,150.
Right.
We're bigger than New York. We compete with like Seattle. We compete with some really large areas.
Cool.
Not that numbers are the whole thing.
Right.
But we have a raging community here of Agile interest. I like the area that way.
Sweet. Go Raleigh. All right, so getting back to our original...
Oh, we have to get back to our...
Well, we don't have to. We probably should.
How are the kids? How's the family? How's the weather?
Good, good, and a good. So we're getting back to our discussion of the Agile Startup Toolbox. Last Metacast, we kind of did a phase zero, just kind of laying the groundwork. Now we're going to start to dig into some real topics, but I do want to take some time and reiterate kind of our guiding principles for what we're doing. We are trying to target shoe-based teams, so if you don't know what that means yet, go to Wikipedia and look up shoe-ha-ri, and it will explain basically new teams starting up trying to figure this out. We want to drive performance quickly, so we're trying to reduce the time of, hey, we're figuring this out, we aren't up to speed yet. And to do that, we do believe we need to be a bit prescriptive, but that comes along with beginning teams, and they need that direction so they can focus on what they need to focus on without having to question everything. And while it is our toolbox, we do want feedback, but there may be times when you say, hey, you think this should put in there, and we'll talk about it, and it might be in, it might be out. So, but we do look forward to that community that is here locally and all of our listeners across the world. We've been big in Germany lately.
Have we?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so...
I think you're drawing us into the German market, probably.
Probably.
Yeah.
I do have...
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. I want to define prescriptives. We're not prescriptions, so we're not talking about drugs or drugstores. And I'm being facetious and I'm not, but... in simple terms, if you don't really get prescriptiveness with Agile, we reserve the right to tell teams what to do in our toolkit and to say, I'm being a little bit hard here, but to say, suck it up, shut up, do it this way for a few sprints until you know more and you can figure it out on your own.
Right, and I think that's the key, is that this is not meant to be a prescriptive approach for eternity, but to give teams direction and guardrails to get up and rolling, and then the better they get, the sooner we loosen the reins, right, and they figure out what works best for
them.
Absolutely. But our goal is to reduce the confusion, the wandering, the things that happen with new Agile teams that haven't done it before. So we're really trying to give a quick start guide, essentially.
Sounds good. What are we going to start with, Josh?
Fidelity. And not 401ks or IRAs or Roth IRAs.
Right.
But how do you handle your information radiators, right? So we should probably talk about the information radiator and what you're after. But really, it's something that Bob and I have debated for years. And he may have won me over.
No way. Yeah. No way. That never happens.
I know.
It's taken years. I've relentlessly beaten you down. No. I mean, fidelity, to me, it means paper versus... So what do we mean by that? Is it low fidelity or high fidelity? Low fidelity, to me, is very simple stuff, like using 3x5 cards, Post-it notes. If you have a burn-down chart, you actually draw it by hand on a piece of flip chart paper or on a whiteboard. You could print things out from tools if you have to, but very low fidelity, very tactile stuff. Tape, stick pins, cork boards.
Magnets.
Magnets, stuff like that. Visualizations, a part of low fidelity is visualizing stuff, you know, on paper. So the sticky notes, you might have red Post-it notes that mean one thing. They might be, a critical or risk stories or risk tasks, as opposed to yellow might mean something else. So you can actually play games with the colors. You can play games with drawing things on it. Some people actually have little pictures of themselves, so that when someone, they have magnets with their faces on it, or caricatures, like South Park caricatures, mm-hmm. where they show ownership. So that's the low fidelity side. The high fidelity side would be using things like, I'm just using tools, but like Rally or Version 1 or not even having a board, actually, not ever interacting at a physical wall, but interacting on tubes, on displays, and having a stand-up, but never having a visualization at the stand-up. You would just stand up and look at each other.
Right.
So I lean, my lineage, my skew is low fidelity. For new teams, I do not like letting them use tools or an emphasis on tools, because it sort of diverts their attention in the wrong direction. I want them to use low fidelity stuff that they interact with as a team for collaboration.
Yeah.
I would argue for that.
Yeah. When you and I first started our journey, I was like, Bob, that's ridiculous. We have
tools. You looked at me like an old, I remember that stare. I was like, crap, I need to retire tomorrow because I've now lost mind share with those young upstarts.
Yeah, I was just like, that's Bob, we have tools, we should use them. This is ridiculous.
You were like that, weren't
you? Yes, I was.
Pretty darn adamant.
I was, you know, yeah. I felt like I said ridiculous about 35 times during that discussion. But I've come full circle. The one thing that I've seen in the time I've spent working through this is that the problem with tools is that you can conveniently not click on that web page and look at the burn down, look at the task board. It's easy enough to not look at it. Whereas if it's on the board in a common area, every time you get up to get a drink of water, go to lunch, come back from lunch, go do whatever, it's there smacking you in the face with reality. And that's the one part that I really like. And I know that there are people that I've worked with that get real satisfaction out of just moving the cards. And I've heard that repeatedly. Like, that's my favorite part, is I just get to slap that sticky on the board and say, I'm done.
Or the ceremony of signing off of a user story, the product owner, like, literally signing.
Right.
You know, so there's sign-off. You can click a box, or right. you can what? Literally sign a card that represents the story.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty powerful, like you said, to do that. You said something else, though, that bundles with this, is information radiators. One of the things that the tools do is they can have the potential, and it's not a tool problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way we leverage it,
right.
I think, problem. But they can hide the data.
Right.
To your point, which is different. So there's low fidelity doing cards and having simple burn down charts and stuff, and then it's what? Putting them on walls.
Right.
Right. Having the information radiators on the visually on walls, and then like actually what? And then paying attention to them.
Right.
Like your stand up would meet in front of the wall.
Yes.
Right. If you had release a scrum of scrums, I've typically, when we've done scrum of scrums, we've met at the release board.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked, we've moved things. So it's not just at a team level, but we've moved things at a release board
right.
or at a team board or a sprint board.
Yeah. I think tools are good if you have the appropriate extension for the tool. So if you have large screen monitors throughout your area that allow you to easily display that, then it's worthwhile. But not everybody has those and has the budget or convince their CEO, hey, I need to spend a couple thousand
right.
dollars on TVs. You know, like, well, why don't you just go draw on that whiteboard I bought you for $200?
Exactly.
You know, so
for our toolbox, are we going to say cards only?
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
Suck it up, cards only.
Yep, and maybe even put a cowbell in there, because that's what we do whenever we get a story to done.
Oh, that's cool. I like that, actually. Okay, you want to add that to our toolbox?
Something to celebrate, and something to actually really drive that stake home of, hey guys, we got something done.
Okay, I like that. So keep it, so paper only, manual burn downs. Mm-hmm. And I've been a scrum master. I've drawn, it is trivial to draw a burn down chart. Right. It is trivial to manually update it on a wall. It is, yeah. I don't know why people complain about it. It is like pretty easy to maintain it. What do we do, and maybe we defer this as part of our toolbox, what do we do for distributed teams? Because I always hear this, right? Mm-hmm. One of the deflections for tools is one of the easiest, most trivial deflections is, oh, we can't use, you know, what do? We have people in India, we have people in Indiana, we have people in Ohio.
Right.
What are we have a distributed team. Do you want to take that on separately? Do you want to talk about that now? What do we do with a distributed team? Do we give them a pass?
So that's an interesting question. I think if you're doing distributed teams well, you likely have some sort of video conferencing that they can have their own board. You can see their board. You can see their board. Things like that. I know we've had trouble with that, with having clarity and resolution on the video sharing tools to be able to see.
You want to come back to that topic?
Yeah, that's a maybe we have a two set or like a distributed team toolbox, right? That has
or an extension or something. Right, yeah. Right. That's why I bring it up. So we're not going to talk about that now. This is for, and this leads, these things are interconnected. Like we want to talk about being co-located versus not, right? Right. That's one of those things. Okay. But keep it simple. It's cards only.
Yeah.
So fidelity is paper. Cool. Where do you want to go next?
You said co-location, right? So I think we start to tackle the things that are like the foundation of getting your team ready to sprint.
So we're going to leave distributed teams all sort of off to the side for a little later. Mm-hmm. So part of do we demand people move from India to Raleigh Durham, even though it's the number five place in technology in the country? But there is this notion of, even on the floor of a building, do you move a team together or not? And I've noticed a lot of people, you and I've worked at a place that, you know, it had 6-foot partitions, right, or five or very high partitions, which was not conducive to co-location.
Correct.
And so even that muddies the waters.
Right.
So let's talk about physicality and co-location.
So the closer the better. And even at the place that had the 12-foot cube walls, we still put teams next to each other, and we did our best with the space that we had to ensure that if I needed to talk to someone on my team, I could roll out of my cube and talk to them or ask a question, as opposed to having to get up, walk across the building, and go ask a question, because the likelihood of you doing that is not going to happen.
So could we, I'm going to be a little bolder, and then you can shoot me down. So stop that. So what we're going to recommend for the toolbox that the team sits together. Mm-hmm. I'm just stating this so you can yell at me. So the team is going to sit together, every member of the team, testers, developers, all types of developers, documentation, scrum master, product owner, are going to sit together at the quintessential card table facing each other. So a long conference room table. Yep. in an area or a room.
Yes.
And they all sit together. So there is no partitions at all. They can see each other. They can hear each other. They can throw spitballs at each other. And they collaborate together. To me, that's... So I'd like to see, for a shoe team, until they learn how to collaborate, I'd like to throw them in that quintessential space. What do you think about that?
I concur.
Oh, come on. You can't...
I do. I'm sorry. Should I argue just for argue's sake?
No.
I mean, that's...
So that's not even low walls on cubes or something like that. That's like, get the team together. You know, you've seen those, everyone on the Metacast has seen those quintessential pictures of solid, you know, agile teams. Right. They're at tables.
Right.
People are looking across the table at each other. A developer, you know, forget pairing. There's a developer sitting right beside a tester. Mm-hmm. And across the table is another developer or a tester or a PO. They almost naturally work together.
Right. And in our last implementation together, our most successful team, the one that got up to speed the quickest and was delivering every sprint from the time we said we're doing Agile, they chose to lock themselves in a conference room and get that party started, whereas others were less inclined to do so, and right, for maybe that reason alone, but the one thing that we saw was the team that did that got up to speed quickest. So I agree with you completely. If you're a shoe team and you want to get rocket and rolling, lock yourself in a conference room or get card tables from Walmart and slap them together.
So, you know, it's weird. It's like preferred case, lock them in a room. So what I've seen, I had a team that I recommended once as a coach. This was like 4 or 5 years ago. They weren't working together, and I asked them to do two things. You've heard me say this. I asked them to put a whip control on themselves, and I asked them to throw. They just weren't collaborating. It was in pods and things, and they just weren't working together, and they were doing scrum or fall, and they were failing sprints, and they failed like 4 or 5 sprints in a row, and they just weren't improving. And I pleaded with them to try something new.
Right.
And I said, throw yourselves in a room, one. And I said, reduce your whip to 3.
Right.
And they actually took on this conference room. And it was weird because it had a door. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that it was a people were really reluctant to go in the door. So they had privacy. So they had a team, like a war room.
Right.
And people were, even though the door was open, people wouldn't burst. You know how when you're in cubes and stuff, people interrupt you and they're talking? Just the fact that there was an enclosed room meant that the interruptions reduced. Even for me, I actually like paused. I'm like, can I come in? You know, I was asking permission to come in. And so I think it kept them focused. So rather than having, a table in the middle of a... So there's two variations. It's a table in the middle of a building versus a table in the middle of a conference room that has a door. I think that's a more isolated, powerful, cool.
Yeah, and the one thing you said is it's like a war room. And the one thing I've said to many people that talk about, well, that just doesn't make sense. I've said, what do you do when it's crunch time and you're working with a group of people and you need to get something done? You guys always say, okay, let's go in a war room, let's work together, let's do this.
Yeah.
So if that's so effective that you know,
I know
that when you need to get things done, that's what you should do, why not just do it every day?
I know.
And getting people over that hurdle can sometimes be difficult, but that's one thing that I was keeping in my back pocket of, okay, so let's say we're at the end of a release and we have 5 bugs we have to get knocked out by tonight. What are you guys going to do? You know, and the instinct that people have is, let's go to a war room and get this done. So then I just say, well, let's do that every day. And let's get that efficiency that we receive from that every moment of every day.
Now, when we drill into that, we should talk about private space and introverts.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are these people. I'm an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
And introverts don't always... They like private, personal time to think. We think better... You know, so it's not always comfortable for us to be thrown into a room. The other thing is, if my wife's pregnant and I need to do or private calls or something, I can't do it in the room. So we don't have to talk about it now.
Well,
but
I think it's worth discussing that just a single room for the team and that's it is not effective over the long term. We're going through a space redesign issue, potentially moving to a larger office, things like that as we grow. And as I look through designs and ideas and things like that, it's always central around those working areas. But the key is that you have to provide alternative seating or breakout rooms or conference rooms for people to feel comfortable with how they need to work. And you need to do that well.
Right? Even in our toolbox, I would argue, again, we can talk about, I think we have the toolbox and we say co-locate, darn it, at a table in a conference room, darn it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on day one, we also have some mechanism for those folks to take a call.
Right.
We can't just throw, it's almost inhumane to throw everyone in a room and say, you have no alternative now.
Right.
That's your office, right? So should we make, I think we make that part of the co-location.
It's like a footnote on.
Yeah, on that, yeah. That we need to take care of stuff.
Yep.
Cool. What else you want to talk about?
Burndowns, right? We kind of mentioned that
We mentioned burndowns a little bit. I think it's on the information thing. I mean, let's actually expand on that. What are the charts?
Ooh, yeah, what do you burn down?
And what do you burn down, and what do we want to... If you picture in our toolkit the team, we're going to set up a wall, right? Mm-hmm. So for a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
So what is going to be on the wall? One thing is going to be a burn down, and we can talk about units.
Mm-hmm.
But what is there anything else on that wall? Why don't we talk? That's what I'm.
Okay.
You know, that's, I think.
So the task board.
The task board. So that's visualize what we are going to recommend is on the wall.
Or right. And when we say task board, we're talking about the swim lanes of your to-do work, in progress, blah, blah, blah.
Are we going to get that? Different. Yeah, are we going to get that done?
Right. Yeah, I'm not saying we dig into it. Just so in case there's anybody just landing on the
same. So how many inches wide are those? I'm just kidding.
Don't start with me, sir.
I know.
Don't you start with me.
I know.
We're 20 minutes in, and I don't want to have this.
Those are details we'll talk about later. Okay. But you're right. There's a board that the team... So there's a burn-down chart. We agree that there's a burn-down chart. What mm-hmm. do you think the unit should be?
Not ours.
Okay.
That's my, like, first
What are our choices? Why don't we list our choices?
Okay.
There's not that many. There's what? And so ours could be a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Stories could be a choice.
Points, some measurement.
Points could be a choice. That's about it, right? I'm trying to think of what else could be burned down. That's
days.
About it. Oh, we could burn down days.
But I mean, you never
We could burn down days. Sort of time. There's time units. There's hours and there's days.
Right.
There's points and then there's stories.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the burn down universe of
right.
items. What do you think? What do you want to burn down?
There's
a trade off when you burn it down. Like hours are nice.
Hours are not nice.
Hours are nice.
Hours are not nice.
From a smooth curve perspective.
No. So. Hours drive me crazy.
I can tell.
In case you can't tell. And that's because I've seen so many burn downs where... So one of the tools that we used at my last job was Jira and the Greenhopper plugin. And your burn down, you could flip between all of those variables, right? So you could do features, hours, and points. And people would always look at the hour burn down because that looked the best. But it never told you if anything was done. Like, yeah, we're putting in the time.
I agree with you.
But
did I say that?
I know you gave me a beach ball there, but it just that's one of those things that drives me crazy is people would always have the default view be the hour burn down, and it's just lying to them. Right? It's not telling you the truth about whether you're getting things done or not.
Well, for a shoe team, it's a good burn down. It's not a bad burn down. If you have
I don't see it as a good burn down.
If you
what do you get out of it?
If you have a healthy team who is getting stuff done as quickly as possible, etc., and is collaborating and is swarming and maybe has WIP limits, so then an hour burn down isn't bad, right? It's because you're getting all this behavior and you're measuring it. I think what your angst is hours don't tell you. You can there's so much more of the story behind the hours that you might not see.
Right.
Right. So that's and for a shoe team, you want to see that stuff.
I still don't see how ours is a useful burn down at all for any team.
Okay, I can tell.
But that's a whole nother.
So what do you want to burn down? So what do we burn? Stories?
I don't think so personally. I think points because with stories, you don't know whether it's large or small, and if you get three small ones done, and you look like so if you have four stories in that sprint and you get three small ones done, you might be fooling yourself thinking, hey, we're almost there,
right?
When 90% of the work is in that last one. So I think if you have the comparative measure that we've talked about, relative measures and things like that you have some idea relatively how much work we have to do. We aren't being prescriptive with hours or whatever it is, but if you know relatively the shape that we're in, that's much more useful.
So if a team commits to 20 points in a sprint, then as they get stories done, you just burn down. So if I get a 3-point story done Tuesday, I burn down 3 points on Tuesday.
Correct.
Okay.
Any reason not to do that?
No, I mean, I think that's fair. I actually like seeing... You know, I mean, equivalent to me is stories. What we're doing there is stories. What we're measuring is the points.
Right.
I like seeing stories. What's missing from that, but it's not the fault of the burn down, is the team could burn down. They could work in reverse order.
Right.
Right. They could work in reverse order.
Yeah.
And still, you would never detect that.
Right.
Right. So they could be working from the bottom list up.
Well, but there are ways you can do that. Is you can prioritize the cards on your task board
right.
and just put the most important ones at the top.
But they could still, unless we do a pure burn down, says I have 20 points whenever they check in. So they could check in the lowest.
Right. But I think that's where a lot of agile starters get hung up on, is they believe the burn down is the end all be all tool to measure how your sprint's going. And right. It's just a tool. It's not the tool.
But that's what I'm leading to. So on our wall, we have a burn down chart. We're going to burn down points. Stop. That's great.
Right.
Do we have anything else up there? So we have our sprint plan up there, mm-hmm. which would be in what, priority order or something? Are we going to have the swim lanes up there as well?
Yeah.
So we'll have the swim lanes up there, and typically those, so we would have those in priority order.
Yes, correct.
So you would see that visual.
Right.
That the high priorities aren't moving.
Right.
So that's cool. Correct. We can see, so it's burn down plus workflow mm-hmm. would be indicative of the swim lanes.
Right.
Do you have any particular swim? Is it to do, work in progress, done? Is it to do, development, QA, done? Is it to do, you know where I'm going.
My ideal answer is to do, in progress, done. But I have broken that in progress out to help identify bottlenecks within our process or to put WIP limits on specific things. So currently, well, until recently, thanks to some very great hires we've had a single QA engineer for 8 developers, and they just were not able to keep up. So we actually broke out QA to a separate swim lane and put a WIP limit on it.
To get the visibility right and the flow.
Right, to really drive home, okay, so Paul has 3 things in QA already, and that's our limit. So if you want to get something into QA, you have to help Paul get something out of QA.
Absolutely.
Right. So I don't know if maybe we start there to help the team identify that maybe there's some issues that they have that they need to iron out with their process. You know, so.
Why don't you, so I've gotten some good exposure lately on I've been using in my coaching for not shoe teams or even whatever, some teams that mm-hmm. have been doing Scrum for a year, but in my view, doing it. This is not, you know, poorly or right. not well. I'll come in and I'll introduce them to a calendar view. Maybe you've seen me. Have we done this before?
No.
Where for a 2-week sprint, I'll literally have them plan. We'll lay out a calendar.
Like a Gantt chart?
No. It's Monday through Friday. Monday through Friday, there's 10 boxes.
Right.
And teams will put a story and then the tasks. So when are they planning on? So a story. Would each story would have its own linear row in the calendar, and if it started on Monday, the story would be there. It had 3 days of tasks; they would be distributed in the calendar. The expectation would be it would be done by Wednesday. Mm-hmm. The next story would lay out in the calendar. The next story would lay out in the calendar.
So it is a Gantt chart.
It's not. That's not a Gantt chart, right? That's not. It's per se.
It's a Gantt chart.
So I'm trying. I'm just trying to.
And I get it, and I've been there, and we've done it recently because we had a single QA person. Like, we need to plan out how we're going to develop these features because Paul's one guy, right? And we can't give him everything all at once.
And that's what I was trying to say is that...
I just have a thing against Gantt charts.
I can tell that, and you shot me.
I've got a couple of quirks.
So let me fit... but what does the calendar do? It helps with multitasking people. Mm-hmm. It helps with Bob's going to be away for 2 days on vacation. Mm-hmm. Like visualizing, oh, how do we handle that? If right. Bob is going, oh, Bob is not going to be able to work on something. So it helps with vacation. It helps with time off. It helps with handoffs. It helps with dependencies. Mm-hmm. It would help with bottlenecks, like a QA person who's right. overloaded. How do we game plan that as a team day to day? It really helps with like knowing where you stand. You commit in the morning. If you come in on Wednesday morning and if there's any work in Monday and Tuesday, I'm just kidding, but I'm not.
Right, yeah.
You know what? You know you're behind. It's not behind from a Gantt chart perspective, but it's behind from an intention,
right.
a commitment perspective. Guys, what are we going to focus on?
Right.
Because we're, you know, whatever your game plan was when you planned the sprint, we're struggling. Now, how do we re-game plan?
Yeah, So as you can tell, I clearly have an issue with Gantt charts, and those are things that
so why don't we
the willies whenever we do that planning. But in the end, I'm like, okay, so that really was the right thing, right? I just need to get over my.
So why don't we drill in? So we're saying we need a swim lane thing, and you and I can debate mm-hmm. the format of it later when mm-hmm. we drill into that. But we have a burn down chart, and we have a swim lane thingy, mm-hmm. and I actually think it's worthwhile for us to actually put some thought into what are the columns and stuff.
I agree.
Because it really matters to shoe teams. Mm-hmm. What else is on the wall?
Backlog.
Okay. You surprised me there a little bit. No. Right, I was trying to...
The question that I have with that is granularity of the backlog.
But the backlog is there.
Right.
Like the next couple sprints?
Right, and how... because to give the team a view of the runway of what's in front of them, but what I try to abstract away is that you generally have a pretty solid understanding of the next X number of months. But everything behind that changes a lot. So I try and keep like a 3-month window of this is what's on our plate. And everything after those 3 months is in a constant churn. And they don't need to be exposed.
But for us, those there's going to be story cards that are, you can't ignore them. You can't say, well, I didn't read it in Jira or whatever.
Right.
It's right up there.
Yeah.
Okay. Then I would say maybe impediments and... drag, what I would call drag cards or drag, like things that are coming in, like team getting poached out for stuff.
I go back and maybe and forth
in like
drag.
An impediment list. Could you buy an impediment list, making it visual? We are blocked by this.
One of the things that my team did here out of the blue that just I loved to death, and I took a picture and posted on Twitter about how awesome it was, is we actually had our burn down on a whiteboard, and they circled blocked items with a red marker and drew like a little stop sign, right? So yes, we have list, right? But it was in flow, so you could see and equate directly.
So you and I can get into that.
Yeah.
So the answer is yes, we have an impediment list.
Yeah.
It's how do you visualize it?
Right.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a more powerful visualization than a list. I buy that. What about drag?
I go back and forth with drag because it can be squirrely to define, and it can often, it's quick to use as an excuse for a failed sprint, but it's tough because you also need to measure that, right? Because reality is not everything goes as planned, right? That's why we're doing Agile. And stuff comes in on left field, you need to be able to respond to it.
Well, you know this. I mean, as a leader, stuff happens.
Right. But I've seen it become a slippery slope, and everything becomes drag at that point. Trying to figure out how to define it and contain it.
So can we say healthy drag? Healthy.
Right, and we can dig into what that is later.
But I'm just saying, do you want, is drag in or out? And if I put healthy drag, would that make it in for you, or is it still out? Because it sounds to me like you're saying it's out.
Go back and forth, but we actually have, on our burn down, we have a support row that essentially is drag.
So let's say drag's in.
Yeah.
I would be very uncomfortable if we didn't put some mechanism in to quantify, because in the real world,
right, exactly,
drag happens, right?
Yeah.
Especially for a new team, because part of this new team is we're plopping this toolbox, and this is good for us thinking. Part of a new team is you're putting them in a universe that's what? Not agile.
Right.
So
you have to train everybody.
Well, put an electric fence around them, and drag is one of those things that you can, at least it quantifies what's going on, because they are going to get drugged.
Right.
Okay. Cool. So that's the visualization side. Anything else? We already said that roles and responsibilities, so off to the side of the area in our war room, by definition, so we have a sprint planning area, which is what we talked about now, but off to the side, we have roles and responsibilities, mm-hmm. we have doneness criteria, we have ready criteria that we'll drew on this. So there's other stuff on the walls.
Right.
There's a picture of you and I there.
Yeah.
So the Medicaid.
With darts, right?
With darts or something. Well, for you, darts. For me, like just lighting candles. Or something.
That's a good play.
Yes. Where else do we want to go? You want to go to size of the team?
Yeah, that's a good baseline.
So 20. I want to make it
40.
I want to. No, 30. That's a compromise.
Yeah, so no.
Well, there's the old traditional 7 ± 2. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about size of the team, we should also, is the product owner part of the team? Let's attack that. Is the scrum master in the team, right? So who's in, are part-timers in the team? So what's the, let's just make it additive. So what's the size of a team from your point of view?
you know, I have a hard time arguing against a 7 plus or minus 2. And I even get, maybe it's just minus 2, right? Like 7's your top end.
Well, you could say less than 10. Yeah. We could do something like it has to be 10, you know, there's a max, right. And less, or greater than 2. There's probably, I'm in my classes, people have asked me, like, how does a scrum team of 2 interact? And I have to stop myself from laughing because I'm like, you know, what does that stand up look like? Who's the product, you know, who argues right. with who? Where's the, you know, who pairs with, pairing is not much of an issue, right?
Right.
So there's probably a minimal and a max number.
Yeah.
I'd say, you know, probably like scrum teams of 2, you should probably do something else.
Yeah.
So 2 or 3 is probably too small. Greater than 10, too big?
I think 3 you could. Well, 3 is a stretch, but you could. Less than 10, and I even, yeah.
We could just leave it at that. Yeah. Less than 10? Yeah. Okay. Anything else around? So that's the size of a team. Do I buy it? That includes every, so who's on the team? That everyone doing work?
Yes, everyone moving cards.
Everyone moving cards. I like it. So everyone owning work, everyone moving cards.
Yeah. Yep. So the full-time versus part-time, is that your, like whether they're in or out?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Now, a product owner might not move cards. Are they on the, they're a member of the team though?
But I don't believe they count against your less than 10 to me.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I think they do.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's a communication channel. One of the defense, I mean, actually the real rationale for that is every additional head requires what you've seen. I don't know if you've seen this. The communication channels, they do the math. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, you have 2 people, there's what is it, 2 communication, you have 3 now, and you want to pass information around. You have 4, right. 5, 6, it's, you know, it's exponential. You have 10, and it's like 1,000 communication points. That's the point of keeping the heads down. So I think if you have a scrum master and if you have a product owner, are they a communicator in the team? And the answer is yes.
Well, but that goes against what we said of whether they're moving cards or not.
But they're not moving cards, but they are in the communication paths, right? They're asking questions. They're sitting at a demo. They can,
right? So our definition of a team member is someone that moves cards. We need to back off of that, you're saying.
Well, we can augment it and say the scrum master and the product owner, outside of, so the scrum master and product owner are different. They're on the team. They count to the 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone else who's moving cards is part of the team. And that cloud can be no greater than 10 people. We could say it like that.
Okay.
That's the way I think of it. So I think of a scrum team as having, right, everyone sort of, it's the team.
Right.
The card movers. I like that analogy. I mean, I like that example. The documentation, I don't care. There's the workers, and then there's only 2 other roles.
Right. Right.
There's scrum master and product owner.
Right, okay. I'm not loving it, but we can roll with that. And I don't have any good argument against it, right? It's just something, you know, like those Gantt chart things. It's like, yeah. There's some bit that's off of my brain that says that I'm not sold on that. Yeah, but
it's efficiency.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, what's the most efficient scrum team that you've ever, have you ever measured, or even a gut feeling? I'm not trying to pin you down,
mm-hmm.
but you know, in your experience, what's the most efficient scrum team in size that you've seen?
Like 6.
That's my number. My number is 6 as well.
Mm-hmm.
6 for me is a magic number. And that almost I think in that case it included scrum master, product owner. So that said like 4 to 5 people, card movers,
mm-hmm.
plus those 2 roles is sort of the magic. So getting to 10 is actually overkill to some degree. You're
right.
Building in inefficiencies. It's a much smaller number.
So is 10 too big? Right.
So I've seen it in multiple companies. This isn't just a coaching thing. I've seen this over when I was a channel advisor for I had samples for 2 years. We actually split a team. We had a 12, we were growing and splitting team. It was companies that were, you know, we had growth.
Yeah.
I split a team for business reasons once because we had priority conflicts. And they were working on some of our search. It was in e-commerce, so some search facilities. we split a 12-person team, a contributor team, in half. Their velocity went down. They went from 100 to like 96% of capacity, believe it or not. I lost nothing.
Right.
I mean, from my point of view, I lost. I'm like, holy crap.
Right.
What? And it's, and I'm not saying that the 12 people were what, that were sandbagging or anything like that. But literally, we did that. That was the revelation for me.
Well, then I think we need to do better for our folks and say 10's too big.
We could. We could, right, say 6 is the magic number. You want to say 6 is, yeah, the magic number?
Yeah.
Okay. It's funny that you said the same number. You know, yeah, that? It's absolutely, and it's sort of, it rings true. I, right, think it's that, and it's not 2 or 3, though. I think there's this sort of,
agreed,
too small.
Right.
And then there's too big, and there's something, there's
it's like 4 to 6 is like you're,
it's like the,
you're
perfect,
really rolling.
You're really rolling.
Yeah.
From a pure efficiency, like in the communications, a very efficient, pragmatic. It's also easier to co-locate those teams, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier to find a room that can, yep, handle this, a table.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
Where do you want to go?
This might be it, sir.
Are we out of time?
Yeah.
Are we? This is... Let's do a review again of what we covered.
Okay.
Can we review what we covered?
Yeah.
We did that the last time. I was listening to it this morning. Metacasters, I am keeping notes. I don't know. We're keeping release notes, and we are going to publish sort of... Before we start drilling in, I think we will publish like the toolkit,
mm-hmm,
pre-drilling, but it's not cooked enough yet. So, but at some point, we will publish sort of the pre-drill down, pre-specifics, pre-writing toolkit, just to get your feedback, so you can pay attention. But we'll put something up on the blog for that as well. So what did we cover today, Josh?
Fidelity.
Ah, yes.
Paper.
Is it marriage? Stay loyal. Stay married.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
So fidelity. Yes. Paper. We also hit on tools.
Yep.
A lot. So we
talked about burn down and things.
Well,
like
then
that.
We went into burn down. We went into clarity. We went into what the wall looks like,
mm-hmm,
with a lot of aspects to that. I thought that was pretty. There was some nice detail. There was nice meat to that. Co-location.
Yep.
We covered. It's a table. It's a room door.
With a useful, nice breakout area.
Yeah, and we need places. We need to be humanistic, right, and not, mm-hmm, just throw everyone in there. We just talked about size of the team.
Correct.
Talked about product owner and Scrum Master as part of that. We came up with 6 as a, it's sort of a, it was interesting as a magic number in at least in our experience.
Mm-hmm.
So smaller, slightly smaller than the advice.
Correct.
Than the 7 ± 2 advice, even though it falls in there. What else do we cover today?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Good metacast, good discussion. So we have more to do.
Yes, lots to do.
More tooling to do. So how do they get a hold of us, John?
How do they get a hold of us?
I always ask the same. You know that? I do.
One of these days you're going
to... I'm going to be able to... But you know what? You know what? I can't do it because you have this hyphen thing down.
I know the hyphen.
See, I'm afraid to be able to... Because I couldn't articulate it. So you've got the hyphen stuff down.
I do, yeah. Through all the registrations and all that stuff. So... To reach us, our blog is metacast.com, meta-cast. On Twitter, we are meta-cast, all spelled out once again because Twitter does not like non-alphanumeric characters. So that's where we are. Reach us, comment, mention us, whatever you need. We are here. We are listening. We are ready to help.
Yep. And I like the way this toolkit is. I like the way this is rounding itself up. I'm looking, mm-hmm, forward to seeing how this sort of turns out. So, Metacasters, we love your feedback. From beautiful downtown Raleigh, North Carolina, this is Bob Galen.
And Josh Anderson.
Shake.
And bake.
Bye, y'all.
There it is.